trainings. And others of you are saying, oh my gosh, you know, four more, I wish we could go on with this forever. Everybody has different opinions on the different trainings, but it's fun to go through a book like this because it just hits home to a lot of characteristics, you know, that we all need to work on. And I even find myself going through, and as I read the book and as I outline it and train it, it's just, it's fun for me to look at different things in my life that I need to change, because I see that there's some corrective growth in the way I, sometimes the way I look at things, the way I look at people, the way I look at life. And this book has given me kind of some new concepts for me to really work on for myself. And I hopefully it's touching some of you in the same way, that there's new ways to look at how you're doing your business or how you're running your life that can help support you creating better results, so let's put it that way, better results in your life, and impacting lives in a different way. So, and that's really what we're here to do. So today we're going to talk about two chapters. The first chapter is on trust, and the second chapter is on abundance. So we'll jump in and cover those two chapters. Okay, so let's kick off and talk about trust. And trust is a big one. It's a big issue. And I learned a lot about trust when I read this chapter as well. I mean, not that we don't understand trust and we understand what it means, that trusting somebody is relying on them, on their character, their ability, and their word of another person. So the word trust is pretty easy to define. We only wish it was easy to apply in our lives as well. And that's where most of us come up short. If we look at what trust is in terms of it being, you know, just relying on other people and their character and their ability and everything else, is it really becomes the basic core of any relationship that you have with a person. And I remember doing some of that self-development work about what are my core values in my life, and trust came up as one of the top three. And when I looked at why it was so critical to me, the why that came out was the fact that when I dropped my card to the floor, which is an exercise I did to kind of, you know, indicate if I lost trust in my life, if I didn't have trust in my life, I felt like I lost all relationships. I felt that there was no, like I was like a sole person on an island, because without trust, I don't know how you have relationships. I don't know how relationships exist, or at least any kind of fruitful relationship can exist if trust isn't an underlying core of that relationship. So the concept is that trust plays a crucial role in all relationships, and I truly believe that relationships are the core of our existence. I mean, we don't really have much purpose on earth if we don't have relationships with people. What therein lies, what's your purpose? You know, you're living on an island all isolated by yourself, creating no greatness, creating nothing. Nothing can be created without being in a relationship. So compassionate samurai, as he puts it in the book, have the capacity to trust others and themselves with their lives. I mean, think about that level of trust, trusting other people with your life, and the wisdom to know when to do so. And that's incredibly critical as well. You have to have discernment over that, because it is not about walking around on earth and trusting everybody and not, you know, taking on proper due diligence around that. It's truly about having a capacity to trust others. And it doesn't mean they can't be strangers to you. We're going to get into that in a moment. But if we really want to live a life, an extraordinary life, instead of just average Joe or ordinary life, we really need to learn how to trust in a significant way. And most of us have problems with trusting because it was ingrained in us as kids. I mean, we grew up in a family lives of, you know, don't talk to strangers, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world, watch out for your backside. You know, we heard all this language over and over and over again on being careful. And it wasn't not to trust people, it was just more of being careful in a world that we have today. We just need to be careful, but it's not about distrusting. It's more of just using good judgment. And with a little kid, good judgment doesn't exist because they don't have the experience around it. So it's hard to teach a child other than to tell them not to talk to strangers, because they don't have the discernment or the judgment they would need whether to trust somebody. So we end up being ingrained in our lives and our background, and as we grow up from the childhood stages, if we don't grasp or tackle that issue further on, we end up carrying a lack of trust forward. The other things that cause us to lack trust in our life is, of course, broken trust. And, you know, when we trust people, we become vulnerable. And when that trust has been broken, we end up going back, and then we get into a concept of living in our cave, and we end up, you know, feeling not to trust again because we don't want to become vulnerable. We don't want to open ourselves up to pain and to the repercussions of broken trust. And so we isolate ourselves. And so many times that happens. I see it very, very often with marriages, broken marriages and things like that, especially in relations like that are that kind of vulnerable relationships, that people just, they go, I'm never going to get married again. I don't even want to date anyone anymore. And they just shut out people out of their lives because of one bad experience. And that's so sad to me because you're just stealing from yourself. You're just totally taking away from your own life. It's a very self-destructive. If it is that people take that position because they're trying to protect themselves, and when really they're causing more destruction in their life than protection. So let's look at why trust, because some of you in the call might be just saying, Mary Jo, I prefer not trusting people, or I have learned not to trust people, or when I look at people, I don't trust them. And I'm going to suggest to you that if you don't have trust in your life and you're not trusting people, strangers even, when you meet people, and to begin with a premise that they're trustworthy until proven wrong, it's going to be very hard for you to do this business. It's going to hold you back immensely in doing network marketing, because when you don't trust somebody else, they're not going to trust you. It's that concept of law of attraction. We attract people like people. So if I'm out there putting trust in people, people are going to trust me. And that's one of the beautiful things about communicating with people on a sound, authentic level, is that when you come across authentic and sound and trusting, then people will trust you when you trust them. So it's a concept of as you sow, so shall you reap. As you sow trust in other people, they will trust you as well. And that's what causes people to get signed up in Manatech and follow you on a path to either improve their financial security or help their health. Whatever it is that they're doing, you're gonna track them on that track if you trust them. But if you have a hard time trusting people, they're never going to trust you. Because they can read that. People read that. They sense it. So it's important for us to learn how to trust. And the reasons, Plummer in his book, Compassionate Samurai, lists, I think he's got five reasons out there, or one, two, three, four, at least four reasons, at least, that he sets forth in his trust chapter about why do we trust? Why is it important to trust other people? And let's go through some of those reasons, because I think, you know, most of us, we might recognize that we have a hard time trusting people, but unless we see the cost-benefit analysis, we're not going to change. We're going to stay stuck in our paradigm that, Aunt Mary Jo, it's more comfortable for me not to trust. So let's look at those. He talks about it's the only way to access synergistic power of teamwork. And this one is so crucial, because the reality is that we're only as, if we run our lives as solo people, if we go out there as just, you know, it's up to me, and all this kind of concept of putting everything on our own shoulders, we're going to totally limit our ability to achieve success and achieve the greatness that we may have within us. Because it's only through a sense of teamwork and building on the energies and the forces around us and becoming, a group effort that we can create far more than we could ever create as an individual. It's the whole concept of synergy, 1 + 1 = 3, or 2 + 2 = 10. So, you know, it's not common math that we've learned in grade school, but it's the reality more than each of them individually could create, which just means that 1 + 1 = 3, so you can have greater greatness. Well, if you don't have trust in relationships, you can't participate in that kind of teamwork because it doesn't function. The functionality of a team only operates as effectively as it is that each individual trusts each other on that team. So building trust and relying on each other is what's going to create that synergistic result. So how critical is that to create that greatness and really tap into the resources that we have and the sources of extra energy and synergy that exists in our world? And I see it happening. For me, I'm on a mastermind team, and of course that's a critical part of my life. Every Wednesday night we have a team call, and I see the synergy that exists after 3.5 years. Obviously, the immense amount of trust that we each have for each other in terms of supporting each other with our requests, and it's just a great thing that we do. And So it's really clear in the synergy that we had in teams we formed when we did the ABCs of teamwork and the different teams we formed through that, to just see the results you can create when you have a group of people all pouring in and contributing their individual energies and their individual talents into creating the best possible results. Even putting together like the ICANN materials for this whole thing, instead of me trying to do all the work around it, we went out and we hired experts. We got videographers and graphic artists and all this stuff, and we just worked as a team to create the best possible results, because none of us individually could have created that result, but together as a group, we produced a real top quality set of materials. So it's about, you know, putting that teamwork in action. So there's a huge price you pay if you don't trust. So again, you want to be able to access that synergistic power of teamwork. A second one is building relationships and intimacy. And of course, that's crucial for us in our lives, that we want to have solid relationships. And solid relationships require trust. If you don't trust somebody, it's very hard to have any kind of growth relationship with them, because it's always questionable. It's always subject to being suspicious or being second-guessing. And without trust, your languaging changes. So you can't have the kind of level of intimacy that you can have when you have total trust in a relationship. And you can't build the depth, and because people aren't going to be authentic. They're going to feel wounded. They're going to feel unsure, and they're not going to want to risk their vulnerability when there's no trust. A third factor is it releases time, freedom, and efficiency. And that's a really big one, because what that talks about is, you know, that when you trust other people, then you can get into a realm of delegating. And that's really important for me. A lot of people, you know, when I travel and do all the things I do, they always go, Mary Jo, how do you do all that stuff? And I go, well, I couldn't do it without Lydia. And I have to implicitly trust her. I don't have a choice, not even choice, because I don't want to go victim to a situation. But my choice is, do I want to be the best I can be and create the greatest amount of results that I can create? Or do I want to limit my effectiveness? And so the choice is, I would never choose to limit my effectiveness. I would always try to be the best I can be and let God kind of run my life and give me directions on, you want me to do a foundation, you want me to do this, you want me to do this women's conference, you want me to work with this, you want me to do, you know, I feel so led to do so many things because there's so many needs out there and be a part of so many activities. And the only way I can do that is by totally implicitly trusting Lydia with everything. And so she handles everything back at the ranch for me. She runs the show, she interacts with people, she runs the entire financial part of the business, of all the businesses, you know, the foundation, the corporations and everything. And she just, you know, she just does a ton of work, and I have to have that implicit trust of her. If I didn't trust her, I couldn't do what I do, because I would always end up second-guessing and being suspicious, and then I wouldn't be as effective, and I couldn't dedicate my time and energy because I would be having to have to oversee everything that transpired. So the concept of trust is what gives you the time, freedom, and efficiency in performing at your highest and possible level. And that's true about whether it's in a family situation or a business situation, whatever it is. The other thing that happens when you don't have trust is, of course, information stops flowing effectively because people don't trust each other's words. We don't know. We start second-guessing what to say because we don't know if the person will take our language right. You know, and some of you might even have relationships like that right now where you have to be so careful and you have to dance around the words that you communicate with somebody because there's an element of distrust there. And that's so sad because it takes so much more energy and so much more time. And, of course, it robs you of time and it robs you of efficiency in your life because you're constantly finding yourself second-guessing or trying to be so careful about every word that comes out of your mouth instead of feeling that you can just be authentic. Another thing about trust is that it's a primary tool for making a difference and being of service. So when you trust somebody, this is so cool, when you trust somebody, what you're doing is you're really empowering them and you want to make a difference in somebody's life. Watch what happens when you empower them. And I can go back and even looking at my relationship with Lydia as well and other people in Manatech, as I started empowering people instead of enabling people in my Manatech business, it was incredible how they blossomed. And that was just the fact that they looked at me and said, wow, she really trusts me. Or, you know, I gave them acknowledgments to show how much, you know, like we had a leadership team that got together, and at the end of the 5 month period, we all voted. I had the group vote for who showed the greatest leadership characteristics, and I gave an award out of $1,000 to the member of my Manitech group that got that highest recognition of leadership. And it's about just showing that how much faith you have in a person, you know, that you really trust that person to be the greatness that they're led to be. And it's incredibly how empowering it is when you exhibit trust in people. They grow, they develop self-confidence, and they feel that they can take on the greatness of who they are in a way that they never may have perceived it in the past. So trusting people is a method of service. It's a method of making a difference in people's lives, and we all need to do that. And then the last characteristic you put in there of why do we trust people is trust gives you an incredible feeling of exhilaration. And some of you don't see that because you go, Mary Jo, when I trusted my first husband, I got no exhilaration. I got totally depleted. And I'm saying you're looking at the bad side of some of the negative ramifications that trusting people can bring you, because we do take risks when we trust. But the beauty of it is accomplish what you trusted them to do. It's incredibly exhilarating at the end of the line. So it's a beautiful thing to be able to feel the joy. And don't overlook that joy of exhilaration around somebody accomplishing something that you trusted them to do. And you should reward that joy. In other words, you should be effervescent in it instead of dealing with it as if it's just an expectation. And I think so many times, I know I do that. I have expectations of Lydia performing at a certain level, and sometimes I think I just take it for granted that needs to get done instead of acknowledging and recognizing the accomplishment of that and stepping into the exhilaration or the joy that it's done, that these things have been accomplished. We tend to do that with children as well. When we don't acknowledge them, when we give them some freedom and we trust them, and then they get home on time, or they return the car on time, or they do exactly what we said, and then we don't go out of our way to, you know, show the acknowledgement around that. So it's important for us to do that. But the beauty of giving people trust and then watching them perform at that level is exhilarating, because it's what frees us up. It again gives us the freedom and luxury of time and efficiency in our lives. But it truly is exhilarating to watch people perform, especially when we feel the risk of trust, and then they accomplish what we've trusted them to do, and that's got to be exhilarating, because we feel like, oh my gosh, I made the right decision to trust them, and it's exhilarating, and it's exhilarating for them as well that they can accomplish something for you. So if all these things are benefits of why we trust, which are huge, and you can look at them in your life, how many of these benefits are missing from your life because you don't trust. Again, we go back to, why is it that people don't trust then? Why is it that we have a tendency not to trust others? And it really is a risk concept. It's risky, and there's no question it is, because you do enter into a period of vulnerability. When you delegate something to somebody else, if they don't do it, you know, what happens? It reflects you. So you have this risk. So you go, I can do it better. I know I'll get it done if I take it on. I hear that language a lot, especially in the field, too, in Manitech. When I see different groups like MANA associations across the country, and I go, oh, Mary Jo, it's better if I just do it myself, because, you know, I delegate this stuff and people don't show up, and I go, that should never stop you from delegating, ever. I said, you might find new people to delegate to. You might have a heart-to-heart with people and talk about trust and whether or not they're dependable and reliable. You know, you make decisions on reliability and dependability. But I said, but you should never stop to ever stop yourself, and it's not worth it for you to lose your time and efficiency. It's just not worth it. So don't let somebody rob that from you just because of their behavior. It shouldn't be something that you're doing. But it is risky. We give up control of things, and some people are control fanatics. They just have to be in control, so they have a hard time trusting because it's just part of their nature. It's part of choices they've made that they need to be in control, and I try to teach. As much as I try to teach that, some people don't like to release it, but we do have... You know, when I do trainings around Clemmer work, and I go, okay, how many people have a program running in their life? I have to be in control, you know, and I, usually it's 20 to 25% of the room raises their hand almost immediately because they feel the sense of that. They know that's who they are. And then there's the sleepers in the room that don't want to raise their hand because they're still looking at me and not trusting me. and so they don't know whether they can trust to lift up their hand because they're afraid somebody might call on them or something. It's hilarious. But the concept of, you know, being control fanatics or people that have to be in control all the time, that's a person that has a problem with trust as well, because you just have this controlling concept that you can do it better, so I'm going to be in control, I'm going to be right, and da, 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 da. And you're never pouring into people. You're not serving others with that attitude. In fact, you're robbing from other people because you're not letting them participate at a level or pour into you. So vulnerability is a real key issue for those people who have to be control freaks. They need to learn the incredible benefit and the incredible characteristic of called vulnerability. And for those of us that had that control program running our life for years, we tend to look at the word vulnerability as a negative. We tend to look at it as a weakness instead of a strength. And when I went through that concept of understanding how vulnerability is an incredible strength to have, and it truly is a characteristic of a true leader, is to be vulnerable. And that's the vulnerability is what allows others to pour into you, and that's so rewarding to them to feel like they've contributed to you, and that's what we need to learn how to do. So, but again, it's a risk. And the risks, give up control. There are different cost benefits to trusting that people, you know, just don't want to forfeit. And so they play a small game. They play a small game in life. Average people play not to lose by not trusting. And that's a game that's a wrong game. You should never play life not to lose. And we see that throughout our lives and play the ways that we operate, that we play a game not to lose. Some of us are playing a game not to lose in Manatech. Yeah, we're so protective of all we want to stay home and we want to manage everybody's automatic order because we don't want to lose those automatic orders. So we're playing a game not to lose instead of what? Playing a game to win big, which would be, hey, you know, if people aren't going to manage their own automatic orders, then they're not worth it. I got to go out there and I got to fight this battle, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to get 100 more customers to take the place of anyone who's not willing to manage their auto order. And if they're not going to order because, if they're only ordering these products because I'm managing it for them, what does that say about the business you're building? Yeah. And I did a lot of coaching on this last year. I remember somebody in one of my coaching classes, I won't mention names, but she just says, well, Mary Jo, all these people rely on me and that's what makes me feel important. And I go, oh, if that's not a lose-lose. That you create dependency, codependency of people because it's what builds, it makes you feel important. Why can't you feel important by empowering people to be the best they can be? Never thought of it. Some people never think of that. I'd rather create total, you know, independence from me and then interdependency with me than ever look at codependency. Because I don't feel important when other people have to rely on me. I feel like I'm a crutch in their life. And I don't want to be a crutch in people's life. I want to be a mentor to people and a coach to people. I don't want to be a crutch. I want people to feel empowered when they work with me. And that's an important step to take and make that turn. But it's, you know, play the game. Don't play. Keep playing a game not to lose. Play a game to win. Play the game to win, to be a clear win-win. And that's a win for you, but a win for others. Because if you win and somebody else loses, guess what? You haven't won. You're still not playing the game right. It's by trusting people, and that's huge. The risk-reward ratio, when you look at trusting people, you know, the concept is that we don't walk around Earth and trust everybody. I have a tendency to do that, and some of the material in this chapter helped me look at it a little differently, that, you know, it's not that we go out and we just trust everybody. It's, you know, the concept is you can trust a stranger, but make sure you do some due diligence. So if you find a stranger, you might want to first find out background and do some more background research on them just by asking questions. And, you know, if they have friends that you have mutual friends, you can ask some questions about that. But do a little bit of due diligence. Don't just step out in pure unmitigated faith and just trust anybody. I don't think that's what we're saying here. I have a tendency to do that. That's how I run my life, and I do it with people on airplanes and airports and all over the place. And I just feel led by the Lord to do that. And you know, maybe my life would be a little less complicated at times if I did a little bit more due diligence. But maybe I feel like some of my discernment occurs just in communicating with people, that when I ask questions and find out about their background and their lives, accumulate that data, and I assimilate the data that I hear to best make me feel like, is this somebody that I want to work with or not? Mine is kind of like when I do my Manatech business, because that's one of the beauties of network marketing. You get to pick and choose who you're going to go in business with. You don't just have to take anybody who walks along. So you find out, you know, the compatibility in a value system. If I see a basic core value system that I, you know, I can align with, that is a very important step for me in terms of my trust level. So, but it's important that you do that due diligence. It's important that you ask. But that's another reason why, you know, we become really poor networkers if all we do is become tellers instead of askers. I mean, you want to ask questions, because through the answers of the questions, when you ask somebody about their family, plus the early childhood, you know, you can go, whoa. Right away, you're going to be a little bit more discerning about that relationship with that person, because they don't have family as a core value. They you know, so wow, that's a huge statement by somebody. Now, there can be reasons for it. I don't immediately dismiss a person, but I'm you know, if somebody says something like that to me when I start asking about somebody's family, I immediately have a little bit of reservation about, okay, let me do some more digging, but I ask more questions to find out what's going on with that person in that regard. And that's how we find out. That's how we can adjust to a person, but at least we're doing due diligence through asking questions. And again, critical, I've never looked at it that way, but I always try to teach people to ask tons of questions, and that's how you build relationships with people, but you also build trust. And of course, the core of any relationship is trust, and that's going to give you the ability to work through some way people respond, what their life is like, you know, how they like their job, their family, you know, that whole concept of form, family, occupation, recreation, motivation. When you get people answering those questions, you'll have a pretty good feel for some of those core values that person has, because it's going to show up in their answers, assuming they're authentic in their responses. And of course, they're going to be a little bit guarded too if they're brand new, because typically people aren't going to be totally authentic. But as you become more authentic about you, who you are, if they start asking questions back and you show your heart, hey people, that's what opens their heart. That's what causes them to open up. I always enjoy that when I walk away from a conversation with somebody, maybe 10 minutes, and they walk away and they say, you know, Rachel, I feel like I've known you for 10 years. You know, and I go, isn't that cool? I would love to have people say that to me every time I interact with them, because then I feel like I've really come across authentic and, you know, people have gotten to know me, because that's a sign of people feeling they've gotten to know you if they feel like after they've only met you one time, they've known you for 10 years. Okay, so work on doing your due diligence, asking questions, and, you know, he goes into it in the book. He talks about in marriages, a lot of times people get married and they do stuff like that. They make big decisions without doing due diligence, and then, of course, that just breeds to failure. He brings up again the concept of failure to trust is you think it's self-protection, but it's self-destruction, and you really have to look at the cost-benefit analysis of trusting, because the value of trusting is too gigantic for us to ever deny it and not do it. And the quote out of the book was, compassionate samurai don't try to escape trusting others. Rather, they look for opportunities to extend their trust to others. So how do we always keep our eyes open for opportunities to extend trust to others? That should be our goal. Inspect what you expect is another way of looking at it, too. Sometimes people go, well, you know what, if you keep you know, checking up on me, then you don't trust me. That's absolutely a false statement. That's an absolute false statement. In fact, checking up on somebody is about being a good steward of your time, your energy, your money. Checking up just means that you have to give yourself an opportunity to correct a situation if it's going down the wrong path or if there's been a miscommunication, so that things can result in the best possible results. And that's what you're trying to create for the other person as well as you. So do not ever let anyone try to convince you that checking up on them is a sign of distrust. It's absolutely not. And inspecting is really a kind of a risk-reward situation. If you want more, you know, as you move forward, as you give more trust, you're going to, you know, you're putting yourself at more of a risk. But by checking up and just ensuring the process is going along, whatever that process might be, all you're doing is ensuring greater rewards for both people, and that's the win-win aspect of it. compassionate samurai, always more concerned about giving. And again, that's what trusting is about. People get afraid of losing. Remember the average person? They live life not to lose, so that's why they don't trust. Well, compassionate samurai are going to trust because they understand that even if I lose a little here, lose a little there, what I have to gain is so much greater. The greatness of the synergy of everything that's out there is so much more powerful and so much greater that who cares about the small things in life. So it's about prioritizing that trust becomes critical to us. And trust becomes critical because it's not only about us, but it's also about how we're giving to other people, the self-confidence and esteem and the empowerment that we give other people. So that's why we do it, because we're more about giving and we're more about contribution than we are about ourself. And then he gives you a couple ideas about breaching trust. Of course, when you breach trust, you start, you know, you lose a lot with people. But there's always forgiveness. So you always have to come from forgiveness. Now, I'm not saying there's always... because that's not true about every human being on earth. We know people carry a lot of unforgiveness around with them, and we do a lot of coaching around that issue as well, because that's a big thing that just robs from you. When you carry unforgiveness towards somebody else, it doesn't do anything against them. It's all about you. You're just robbing from yourself. You're stealing from yourself. And when you get that correct perspective, you'll learn how to forgive at a whole nother level. But, you know, forgiveness is critically important, that we come from forgiveness and we walk away from hurt and pain and be able to forgive. And that's what's underlying the concept of being able to rebuild trust with people, that others you can learn to trust again but you can't if you never forgive them. So if you somehow have broken trust in a relationship, one of the ways to rebuild it is to start making commitments. In fact, that's one of the things I tell people to do in Manatech relationships. When I'm on telephones with people, and I say, well, listen, let me send you a pack of information out tomorrow. And I'm a crazed person. You know, I'm all over Lydia like hotcakes. So I said, do we get the package out? Okay, then I'm working until 8 o'clock tonight. I'll run into the airport. I mean, I do that because when I make a commitment to somebody, I know that I know that I know. One of the things that I can help to build trust with somebody, whether it's from broken trust or not, in a romantic relationship, a lot of times it's a brand new relationship, so I want them to really get they can trust me. So when I make a commitment, I'm going to send a pack to them. Man, I get it done because I love the resounding impact on the other side of the phone when they go, Mary Jo, I just got to leave it. It was so fast. And I go, I told you I was going to send it. I said, I do what I say, and I do it now. I don't put it off because this is important. And see, now that level of trust that they have for me because I do what I say has just catapulted. So is that not level of a trust that's going to pour into whether they trust me recommending these products? Because the products are the products of the products. The materials are out there. And so many times we want materials to do the selling for us. Well, thank goodness we don't have all that material anymore. Now it's up to us. Up to us becomes we need to be able to have people trust us. So now it's even more important that you come from heart and you come from commitment. And making commitments and keeping them is a number one way to build trust and also to rebuild trust. And, of course, making yourself accountable to others is incredibly critical. And we talk about that big time in ICANN program with all the team structure that we have, is that we have joint accountability that works wonderful for people. Okay, so that's trust. So we blew a topic, big topic. And hopefully throughout some of that, each and every one of you might have felt some twinge somewhere, because I sure did when I went through all that material. It was really great material. The next chapter we're going to talk about today is called Abundance, one of Mary Jo's favorite topics. And, of course, I put out that double CD set from the church. They taped me at a church, a women's conference, and I did the whole concept of the God wants you to be abundant, and it came not from a perspective just of monetarily, but from joy and peace and security and so many things. And it's a great double CD set. Everybody loved it at church. My pastor, the reason I put it out there for Manatechers to tap into to use as well is because the impact it had on my church. My pastor's wife didn't even attend my seminar because there are like 40 different seminars going on in a day and a half women's retreat. And, of course, she could only choose about four or five to go to attend. But they taped them all, and she listened to the CD in her car one day, and she said she started crying, and it just had so much impact on her heart. And so what she did is she duplicated like 1,000 of them, and she handed them out to all the ladies in our church as a Mother's Day gift, and that was pretty cool. So I said, boy, if it has that impact, maybe I should share it with other people as well, which is why I did it. But it's about abundance, and it really is. The Lord wants you to be abundant. I mean, he tells us that in John 10:10, and he gives us that concept of, you know, anything is possible through him. So from a Christian perspective, people, abundance is right there for all of us. It is meant for us. And don't misread my concept on that. I'm not a prosperity preacher. That's not where I come from. I'm not saying that God wants everybody to be rich from a monetary perspective. I don't believe that's true, because I think we all have different purposes on earth. But I do believe he provides us with the means of having unbelievable abundance in our life if we just choose to step into it. And I think from a perspective of looking at our lives, you know, when I look at things in my life and I look around and I say all the things that he's laid on my heart to create, and I go, I can't afford to be in poverty. I mean, I can't afford to live a life in poverty. There's too much to be done. There are too many incredible goals out there. And I feel a movement in this country. I feel a movement towards change, and I feel a movement towards picking ourselves back up and redoing a lot of things that we've been doing so ineffectively for years and years and years, whether it's in the educational realm or it's in the personal services realm or it's in the healthcare industry. There's just so much that needs to be worked on. And I would love to dedicate my life the next 8 years just without anyone having to have to pay me. Just let me go out and be a servant to make a difference in many of these different areas and just give up my time and energy. But if we don't have some kind of level of financial security for us, we're stuck. And I would say that probably everybody on this call probably feels led to do something in this world that makes a difference, that really will create a greater country, a greater U.S., a greater, you know, how can we be better? How can we be a better harbinger of our values in this world instead of what we've seen in the past? And each one of us can feel a sense of urgency around that. And yet, how can we do it if we're stuck in poverty? We can't, because we don't have the financial resources to make the next step. So we get stuck instead, and we get stuck with mechanisms. So the idea is, like, let's be abundant. And when you look at Compassion Samurai, they come from the question, they go, how can I? That's the question. I love it. Average people ask, can I? But Compassionate Samurai say, how can I, right? They're already past the point. It's not a matter of whether they don't believe in their own, that they have limitations. I wish I could find a ton of compassionate samurai to have my I Can program complete overnight, right? Because you go out there and present it to people, and people go, well, I don't know if I can do this, Mary Jo. And I'm like, because I know it's all their own limiting beliefs, you know, and I just want to take a big eraser, and I want to erase them all and just say, oh, don't carry those limiting beliefs forward. I just had another woman that said, she goes, Mary Jo, I failed at everything. I did Amway, I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this. And she goes, I just don't know. This is so beautiful, but I don't know. I just, you know, and I go, so your past controls your future. I says, I want you to do a little journaling. Just go home tonight and journal on why your past should control your future. And I just opened that door for her to take that activity. I wasn't trying to manipulate, cajole her. And you know what the reality is? That I did that with this woman 4 or 5 days ago, and I told her to get back in touch with me when she's done. And I haven't called her back. She hasn't called me back. But I just, because I know that my role in her life, she may never do I Can. And that's unimportant to me as much as what's more important is how am I impacting her life? What am I creating different in her life? If I can just get her to look at the fact that her past doesn't control her future, what a huge change for that woman. So the idea is that we need to understand that we have that abundance around us. We ask not, can I, but how can I? And when things are laid on our hearts, we just go, okay, how can I do that? And we just start allowing the universe to work with us in conjunction with synergy with people and teamwork to create the results we want to create. Many times today we see people that just want it so fast. They don't have the patience. They want it yesterday, and that's not what happens. Even with the ICANN program that works so proficiently for 12 months, people sometimes, they don't even want to put the 12 months into it. 12 months. Do you know how fast 12 months passes? How many of us can remember January of 2007? I can remember it like it was yesterday, because I think that's what happens to us as we get older. We time just passes so fast. I remember when my first grandson was born, and today he's going to turn 7 this year. Wow. it was like just yesterday I was crocheting booties for him. I mean, it was crazy. So this stuff just, time just passed. So we need to look at, if you can create this difference in your life in 12 months, why are we not doing it? Yeah? It's about not going, can I, but saying, how can I? Coming up with just putting the energy and the resources behind it to make it. But we have to do the steps. And we have to take the primary. Some of the beauties of network marketing is that we go through step by step. They used to ask me to give testimonials. They used to have the presidentials come climb up and give testimonials at Mana Tech headquarters on Tuesday nights and say, okay, how is life different for you now that you're presidential? And I would get up and I wouldn't talk about, the cars and the houses and all the stuff that everybody else was talking about. My kind of concept was, it's not about getting to presidential. It's not about being a presidential. It's about the process of becoming one. I want to talk to you about the changes in my life over the last so many years of just watching me achieve this result. And that's the beauty. I mean, what it is it's the process that creates the person. And therein lies the beauty of achieving that result, not the net result. Too many of us are too tied into the thousands of dollars or the material or the monetary rewards. We need to tie ourselves into the process of who we become and the process of achieving that result. And that's the lessons that we learn if we're learning them. And that's us being open to learn instead of just kind of going through motions. So the concept of abundance occurs in stages. We become more and more abundant in different ways, in sense of security, in sense of trustworthiness, in sense of our value system. The abundance comes in stages. So we need to watch that abundance grow in our lives and continuing to acknowledge it. And that's one of the importance about having a good team that you work with or a mastermind, so you can acknowledge wins in your life. Because sometimes we go months on end without thinking we've won anything. And in reality, every week we have things that we've accomplished that sometimes we just brush over. And if we don't acknowledge them, acknowledging them supports us moving forward in a much better way. And always know the price. When you look at something and you set a goal to accomplish something, know the price that you're going to pay. So is it worth the time, money, and energy? If it's worth the time, money, and energy, and I go back to I can, is it worth 6 to 10 hours a week, every week, for 1 year, for me to get that level of financial security of $2,000 to $6,000 in residual income? And I go, absolutely. Of course it's worth that. My pastor's wife, she's on fire. She goes, absolutely. She says, I want to send the whole, her goal, when you say, what does my life look like in 12 months? Her whole goal is to take everybody from our church who wants to go to Kenya in the mission field next summer, a year from now. 2009 summer, she wants to be able to supply the financial resources for everyone in our church who wants to go to Kenya on a mission trip. Huge, huge. You don't think that's driving her? I mean, it's driving her like crazy. But she knows the price she has to pay. She's going to have to be much more disciplined and structured. She's going to have to get out of her comfort zone and do things that she wouldn't otherwise do. But you know what? She's got the time and energy and money. She knows exactly what the price is going to be, and she says, I'm willing to pay it. Some of us aren't willing to pay a price of $100. We look at self-development work, and we go, oh, Mary Jo, that's going to cost me a couple $100 to go do that. And I go, so? Oh, well, I don't have the $200. I go, do you get this $200 is going to be worth $1 million for you? I mean, do you get the trade-off here? You got to see the benefit, and that's a problem. People don't perceive a benefit. They're stuck, and they don't perceive that benefit. I mean, it's just a different attitude. I remember when I was blessed with my first personal development seminar, I was buying tons of books from Clemmer, and they called me up. They said, what are you buying all these books? If how-tos were enough, we'd all be skinny, rich, and happy. I love the content of the book, and I started teaching it. And so I started selling them to people, and I wanted to get them the best price. So I would buy cases of them, get them for $8 a piece instead of $14.95. So I was selling them to people, at my cost. I just wanted them to read the material. It was invaluable material to share with people. So I was, and after buying, two cases of these, over 200 books, they called me, why are you buying these books? And I explained it all, and then they said, well, we have seminars. I go, no, I didn't know you even had seminars. I had no idea Clemmer had seminars. This is way back in 2001 or 2002. And so I said, I didn't know. And they told me about the seminars, and I said, great. You know, and they said, we'd like to comp you to a seminar. So, you know, and I don't know that, it was just a nice gesture on their part, but, you know, was the comping of the seminar necessary? Well, let me tell you what I did with the comping. It was $299 back then. I think they're over $500 or $600 today, but that was 6-8 years ago. So, and I said, $299. So what I did, it was up in Minneapolis, so I was going to have to fly up there. I called three of my downline up in the Minneapolis area, and I said, you know what? I really want you to join me in this seminar. It's a 2.5-day seminar, and I said, it's $299, but I'll give you each $100. So I took my $300 they gave me, and I allocated $100 to three people in my downline. So I paid for my own $299, and I just paid it forward to three other people. And that's called, you know, that's just pouring into people, acknowledging how critically important this is and the investment that you can make in people and they can make in themselves to create a better you. And that's really what it's about. So we need to be willing to go and hire experts and find people who are really good at doing certain things and bringing them into our lives so that we can perform at a better level. But we can't come from scarcity or we're going to get stuck. And that's the big problem. There's, you know, before abundance manifests in a tangible way in your life, it must first manifest in your mind. Before abundance manifests in a tangible way in your life, it must first manifest in your mind. That is a huge, huge statement, because so many of us are stuck in scarcity mindset, and it's destroying us. It's destroying our country. It's destroying people from being effective. It keeps us stuck. What is scarcity? It's the classic pie story. When you were a little kid, you sat down to Thanksgiving dinner, and there was one pie on the table, a pumpkin pie. And when Mom cut it, she cut it into what? 8 pieces, right? 8 pieces. And that's our one pie, and it only can be split. And maybe we can take the pie and split it into 16ths, but if we put it into 16ths, that means everybody gets less because there's only so much to go around. The reality is Mom could go back in the kitchen and make 4 more pies. She could make 100 more pies. There is not a limit. There's not a scarcity. There's not a limit of resources. I grew up with a limit of resources. I was an economy undergraduate, an economics undergraduate, and I learned in Keynesian economics, and that was all about limited resources. When I was going to college in the early 70s, they were telling us about by 1990, we were going to be out of coal and out of gas and out of. They had all this stuff, all these statistics, that we were going to have this disaster come upon this world by 2000, that we would never. It's a foreseeable future disaster of running out of natural resources. It was hilarious. I mean, that's what we taught, that's what they taught. And, of course, we know that there's nothing so false in the world. In fact, Paul Zane Pilzer released so much of that when I heard him in Chicago when he talked about unlimited resources. Incredible. But we get stuck in this scarcity mentality. We learn from it out of our depression-experienced parents who rub two nickels together so hard that the heads fall off, that buffalo heads fall off by today. Used to be a pack of gum. No luck today on that one. So we get stuck in classic scarcity mentality. There aren't enough prospects. There aren't enough leaders. There's not enough time. There's not enough money. There isn't enough love. There isn't enough. You just fill in the blank. And look at how many times you fall into these traps on a daily basis. And I want you to get rid of that languaging, because scarcity language will destroy you. It keeps you stuck. So abundance is the position in which your wholeness and completeness are not dependent on external circumstances. It's a huge statement. Some of these statements in this book are so awesome because they really are so true. And if we just really held them as a truth in our lives, it would totally change our lives. We have people that look at success as material things. We go out and accrue things. We try to grab things because that's somehow how success is. But then we become spiritually bankrupt because no happiness ever comes. Your subconscious thinking and character has to change first. And that's what's so important, that we get that abundant mindset. And here's a quote out of the book that I love so much. Your thoughts are invariably what will always create wealth in your life. And your thoughts will create the right habits that facilitate perpetual wealth. Take that quote and put that above your computer and just stare at that. And then start telling me the power of your mind, the power of that thought. Remember, we talked about the secret on this call. So we need to start controlling that conscious mind, conquer it before the circumstances arise. So start building a world around abundance, understanding and accepting the fact that abundance is for all of us. Abundance manifests first in our mind, so we need to work on our mind to make sure we have that. And don't become reactionary, but don't wait for things to happen, because then you become a victim of your circumstances. Make things happen. I'll tell you what I did last year, which is a cute example. I put it down here, example of last year. Last year we had a lot of problems in Manitech, and no one will ever suggest that we didn't. We saw a lot of trouble with Global View and skincare debacle, and then we had Texas AG, and everybody's business suffered, except for, I think, Don and Kenny Anderson. I think they came out with a statement that their business grew last year, but, you know, and there are some people that had some Korean downline that really took off as well. But for the most part, I'm not talking about the 1/1000th of 1% of the people that actually saw their business grow last year, but most of us suffered pretty dramatically in our business. And it cut into my income, you know, in a way too, 20-30% drop. And it was in October. I was just, you know, I was at church one day and I just was praying about something. And I felt led by the Lord to increase my tithe. And I went and I talked to my husband about it. I said, you know, I think the Lord's telling me to, and he goes, then do it. And I go, great. So we increased our tithe. We increased it yet another $100 a week. And I was making less money than I made in Manitech in three years or so. So it's not, but it's about the abundant mentality. It's about truly the abundant mentality. Like, who cares? We're increasing our tithe. That's the way we do it. We truly show signs of abundance, even in times that are tough. You still show signs of abundance. You still go out there. And it's true. It's a statement of abundance. And I worked with some evangelists who, they tithe first of the month, and they don't even have the money. They tithe. They say, how much money do we need to get through this month? They don't even have the money. In other words, they raise money by going and speaking. They go on speaking tours, and they get money from people or donate to them. And if they say, I need $4,000 to make it through this month, the first thing they do the first of the month is they put $400 into their church. They tithe first with whatever money they do have, even though they don't even have any pro, they don't know where the $4,000 is going to come from, but they say that's what we're going to need this month, so we tithe based on what we need, not what we're earning, but what we need. And somehow the Lord always provides for them. I wonder how that is. So every act of giving is a way to counteract scarcity. The more you give, the more you get. So you can't, as one of the famous sayings, you can never outgive the Lord, and that's for sure. Learning how to receive is an important part of abundance as well. You got to be open to receive. I tell people, if you don't empty your coffers, you're not going to be able to receive. And he made a statement in the book that said, you know, if you had a glass of water and you poured it in the ocean, you wouldn't think anything of it. But what would you think of it if the ocean tried to be poured into your glass? And that's really how we walk around on earth. We walk around on earth with a little glass, and that's our whole ability to receive, is in that glass. Instead of walking around on earth like we have an ocean ready to receive the waters that could come from another ocean. We need to you see the mentality? We walk around with a little glass. We walk around, people are going, oh, I hope I get $1,000 in the next month or something. You know, instead of saying, hey, I pray for unlimited cash flow. Come from the greatness of what you can create and the openness to receive the greatness out there, because we know that it's coming not from us, that God is truly the source. And then the last thing he talks about in the abundance area is to live by a system. Systems create predictable results. Isn't that intriguing language, especially as we talk about I can? Budget, because you live off of 80%, you tithe 10%, and 10% you put into a fund that you never touch. You just put it away, and you never touch it. It's not for a rainy day. It's not for it's something that you never touch, because if you can take 10% of your income and you can throw it away into some, you know, and I don't mean throw it away in terms of be a poor steward of it, but put it in an investment account that you can never touch. And I'm not going to say that there's a way you can do it that never touch it, because you always can have the flexibility, but discipline yourself that it's there never to be touched. And I'm going to tell you, it'll open your head up to abundance, because if you truly can live off of 80% of what you make instead of 90% or 100% for some of you, it's incredible what a difference it creates in your mentality about to create a more abundant thinking in your head, that you truly can set aside 10% of all your income each month and not even change, not even flinch. Now you're opening up to the concept of abundance. And that's why Clemmer promotes 80-10-10 rule. Okay, and then the last thing is coming from possibilities, not probabilities. And And, you know, he does a good analysis of that in the book that I love that I hadn't seen before, that the whole concept of, you know, I always preach and teach that, but I liked what he said, that when you come from probabilities, what you're relying on is your past, and you're relying on your reason. So you're relying on your own conscience to dictate to you what you can and can't do. And that's why some people say, well, Mary Jo, I'm always coming from probabilities because that gives me the greatest sense of what I can and can't do because I'm relying on what I've accomplished in my past. And so why should I throw that aside? And his analysis is your conscience is so limited. And I think that's right. That hits the nail on the head. Why come from that reasoning when it's so limited, when there's so much more greatness out there, when God is really our provider and anything is possible through him, for us to limit our future based on our past because it's our reasoning that tells us that, we're denying the existence of the greater power. And that's a big thing to grapple with for those of you who want to say, well, Mary Jo, I couldn't do it before, so why can I do it now? Whew. Think about what you're really saying. Okay, so that's abundance. So trust and abundance, two critical issues that we can work on. Okay, any comments from the field? I know we're a little bit over. Anyone have any comments? Anything hit you, strike your fancy in the talk today?
Mary Jo.
Uh-huh.
This is Leah in Lebanon, and going back to the trust, when, like you said, you hire Lydia to help you,
right?
Does she have to be an associate to work with Manatech?
No.
For you?
Mm-mm. She happens to be because I put a position I put her in my downline somewhere, and, you know, I've been growing a position for her just as extra supplemental income, but she doesn't have to be an associate, and she's not doing the business. She doesn't go out and share with people.
Mm. Okay. And the next thing, if somebody decides to do that, are they best to have an LLC or a corporation?
My advice to you on how you structure your organization is that you stay as a sole proprietorship as long as possible because there's so many more benefits. Sole proprietorship gives you a lot of benefits like deducting your house and household expenses. When you become a corporation or you incorporate as LLC, you can't do that anymore because you can't lease your house back to your corporation. IRS doesn't let you do that. So you lose all that homestead, all those house, you know, write-offs that are so considerable. So I say tell people to stay a sole proprietorship, and you don't really need the protection of an LLC or corporation in early stages because the benefits of that are really to shelter, you know, income from employment taxes. That's one of the huge benefits of setting up a corporation because then you can pay yourself a salary and you don't have to pay employment taxes on your Manatech income. But you really, until you're making $40,000, $50,000 a year in Manatech, you really don't have to worry about it because you can't pay yourself. I couldn't pay a salary of $5,000 to me and try to limit my employment taxes because the IRS will impute fraud because it's not a fair market value of compensation. So I think that the wisest thing is to stay as a sole proprietorship.
Well, what's an LLC? Is there any benefit to it over a corp?
Yes, over a standard subchapter S corp or subchapter C corporation, because it's a subchapter C, there's a benefit because you're taxed as partners. There's only one level of taxation in an LLC. Yeah, so there is a benefit to it.
Thank you very much. I'll send
you
some snow if you'd like from Lebanon.
Yeah, great. Great to hear from you.
You love that snow and ice, huh?
There you go, yeah. Anyone else?
Mary Jo, how do we get a copy of your CD on abundance that you did for
the... Oh, you can get it. DupliPack's still selling it.
What's the title of it?
It's called, I don't remember what the name of it is. You can just call it Abundance, and call them up and say it's a duo CD. One of them's about health, and one of them's on abundance. And
okay.
They're a duo set CD set that you can get from. Just ask them, say Abundance, and I'm sure they'll have it for you. That from that word that could trigger it. Okay.
Great.
Hello.
You bet.
Hello.
Uh huh.
You hear me?
Uh huh. I can hear you.
Oh. I have a question. If as far as paying employees, if you trust them more, do they get paid more?
If you trust employees more, do they get paid more? That doesn't necessarily.
No.
I think that if you as are you. Are you talking about being an employer?
Yes.
No, I think that you, as an employer, you can trust your employees more without paying them more. You're going to be, by trusting your employees more, you're going to be paying them in a different way.
Hmm.
Why? Because you're going to be increasing their self-confidence and their self-awareness and other things. They're going to become more valuable to you, and they will start performing at a different level for you. So you may, down the road, see an increase in productivity and an increase that will would allow you to pay them more. You'll get the most out of your employees if you trust them, for sure.
So what I'm understanding is that you it would automatically increase their value by increasing their income.
Why would it increase their income?
Well, if you value someone and you're relying on them, you don't have to spend a lot of time monitoring their work and you
Correct.
Trust everything, then they would deserve more income.
Well, they would, but that doesn't mean necessarily that an employer pays them more. I'm just saying that there's no question in my mind, as you trust employees more and you pour more trust and faith in them, they will perform at a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
And your productivity will increase in that company or in that entity. Your productivity will increase, so thus you will be in a position where you're going to make more on the bottom line, so you can choose to reward the employees in a way that rewards them for being more trustworthy. So it is cycles there, but not all employers are like that. That's always what's going to happen. But you always will get the benefit of trusting employees more. There's always a benefit. Now, is there a risk? Absolutely, because you might have to, but you have to have the discernment on how much trust to give them. But the idea is always be pushing. You as an employer should always be in a posture of trying to trust and putting more energy into trusting your employees more. Because that's what's going to allow them to blossom and create the greatness around you. When you, as an employer, treat them as cogs in a machine, you're limiting their effectiveness. You're quashing their creativity and their ability to contribute in a significant way. Because you're limiting them and you're saying, you only do X. And that's all you're giving them to do. When more trust could create greater results, greater feedback, greater contribution to the environment, better suggestions will come from them. If you trust them more, they're going to be more open and honest and more authentic with you and how to do the business better.
Mm.
Does that make
some
sense to you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's cool. It's a great, it's called servant leadership concepts. It's about you serving as the leader, serving the employees, instead of always looking at it backwards, how we did on the industrial age, which was employees weren't even treated as assets. They were just, you know, labor, and that's how we listed labor instead of contributors and, you know, augmenters and productivity agents, you know, which is what they are.
The other very big issue is, though, if a person isn't doing what they like to do, then they may not be motivated to be acknowledging that trust. They may just be in a job because they're making an income to provide
right.
whatever they need, but they don't really enjoy it. But
how could you, if you had more trust in that employee, okay, could you not listen to that employee about what they really wanted to do? And maybe there's another way of retooling the business to fit the employee's real contribution that they could make to your company.
Mm.
So maybe if they worked for you 8 hours a day and they kept doing the same job they'd always done, which they're not real favorite, it really isn't their favorite task, but instead of 8 hours a day, if they could increase their productivity because you trusted them and you gave them another task to do 2 hours a day, which really was what they wanted to do in life, now look at the benefit you get. They become much more highly productive in the job they don't like because you've honored them by giving them 2 hours of work that they absolutely adore doing, and they
mm-hmm.
feel like they're being fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
You
sure.
see?
Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, but how do you find out what that is? How do you know if they even like or don't like it if you never become authentic with them in a relationship that allows them to have the freedom of expression about what that, you know, and you answer, you say, what would you like to do if you could do anything you want to do? I mean, how could you make this different? How could you, give me 10 ways you can make your job different that we could work together to help make the job different that would be more rewarding and fulfilling for you? And see what those 10 ways are and start with that as a opening premise.
Mm-hmm.
And see, when you get that from them and then you perform and create something different for them in any one of those ways, you've just increased their trust of you as employer.
Mm, that's good.
Yeah. Cool, huh?
Thank you.
Yeah, great.
Mary Jo, my name's Nancy. I'm in Fresno, California, and this is the first time I've heard you talk about Compassionate Samurai.
Uh-huh.
Where can I get that book?
You can order it from Lydia. Just we send an email to Lydia through Manatrain. There's a website on the Manatrain, manatrain.net, and she'll send it out to you. Look at manatrain.net, and there's an order form that you know where you can order all sorts of stuff. And she's got the Compassionate Samurai book there as well. Sure, absolutely.
Hey, thank you.
You bet.
Mary Jo.
Uh huh.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Layman. I met you in Fort Smith.
Hi, Lou Ann. Yes, of course. Hi. How are you, sweetie? Good to hear and glad you're on the call.
Thank you. I am too. I just wanted to thank you because I can already see that so much is going to be brought into our life. Just, I mean, the whole physical, spiritual, and mental, and everything, just getting the opportunity to get filled in.
Yeah,
and I wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you, Lou Ann. That's great. Yeah, Lou Ann's one of our new ICANners, and she just got involved in Manatech and was at the Fort Smith area meeting this past weekend, and we had a blast. We really had a good time there. So we honor you, Luann, and thanks for coming on board. Okay, everybody else fine? Okay, well, listen, people, have a great week. Whatever you need, just keep, you know, plugging ahead. And remember, abundance, you got to change that mental state first. That's where you start coming from. Consciously take on abundance in your life and watch what happens. It's really incredible how everything else starts falling in place, but you can't just go out there and say, okay, I'm going to be abundant. You got to get it in your conscious mind. You got to change that attitude around it. Okay, love y'all. Talk to you tomorrow. Talk to you next Monday. All right, bye-bye.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end.